3D printing is cheaper than traditional stick built by quite a wide margin. Depends exactly on what you are printing, where you are, and so on. But we are talking about savings, 20, 30, 40% cost savings from 3D printing.
If you're interested in how highly successful investors overcome limitations and become unstoppable forces of success, you're in the right place. The Conscious Investor Podcast features weekly conversations with real estate investing experts and delivers a Monday Mindset episode to help launch your week with intention. If you believe success is for everyone willing to think, then do, these conversations will be your weekly rocket fuel. Conscious investors, welcome back. I am thoroughly excited to have Johannes here today on the podcast. Lots of reasons why, so many reasons why, but I'm going to point back to where we actually met. And that was when I was facilitating the Impact Investing Network, and he actually came and presented, and it was absolutely phenomenal. So if you're curious about getting into some more granular concepts, then you can head over to the Conscious Investor YouTube channel, and you can check out that Impact Investing Network meetup. Sorry, I'm losing my words apparently. And so that's just another way. I just wanted to tell you that up front so that you have another way to even dive deeper into all the things, because he is absolutely extraordinary. And I cannot even do you justice as an introduction, because you are such a prolific person across so many different modalities in the investment community and the world in general. So Johannes, thank you so much for joining us today on The Conscious Investor.
Absolutely, Julie. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I look forward to our conversation.
Oh, I love it. Now, everyone who's listening, as always, and you're probably used to this, are going to say, okay, hold on. Where is the accent from? And tell us, typically I don't go into backstories too much, but by nature of, okay, we have an accent, and some of you might notice that he has the initials DR in front of his name. And so you're a doctor. So can you tell us a little bit about who you are as a person? Because I think it's absolutely fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. So I was born in Finland. You can see it. If you look at my family name, it ends with N-E-N. That's a good sign that somebody's Finnish. Almost all of our names are like that. So I was born there. I came to the States in 2006 for my PhD. So I'm not, unfortunately, the kind of doctor that's useful in an emergency. I have a PhD in political science. I studied at the University of Michigan, so go blue. And since then, I've taught at Columbia University, and now I'm a professor at Johns Hopkins. I live in Northern Virginia with my wife.
Thank you so much. And what a way to, you're very succinct and also gave us a history lesson as well. And school recently resumed for you. I say recently because when this airs, it will be a little bit distance from that. But what kind of classes are you teaching this semester?
Yeah, so I have actually three classes this semester. So this is going to be a teaching heavy class semester for me. I'm teaching a kind of an introduction class to energy resources, environmental issues. I have a class on energy and economic development, and then I have a class on policy analysis.
Hmm. Very fascinating. And things that are happening in that sector, we could nerd out. So we'll save that part because I have a friend that's very much involved in that space. And I have to make sure to connect the two of you. But we were talking off air. And when we scheduled just a session for the podcast, we were talking about your past of investing. And here you are involved at doctorate level, teaching at highly acclaimed universities, and you passively invest. Tell us a little bit about how did you get involved in passive investing, and what are you passively investing in?
I started as a passive investor around 2019. So this was before the pandemic. And my reasoning was very simple. I was looking at the stock market valuations, and I was scratching my head. I did not understand why anybody's putting money in the stock market, given how expensive the stocks are. I found out about these syndications, made a few investments. My timing was very lucky because, you know, during the pandemic, these values really skyrocketed. So I had some tailwinds, but I was also kind of educated enough about real estate by then that I knew what I was doing. And so I made some pretty good investment on the syndication side. And my investments, I have a portfolio across different asset classes and across the country. I would say multifamily is my staple. So most of my money is in multifamily investments, Florida and Texas being the two largest states. I also have some money in mobile home parks, some industrial assets, and hospitality, so hotels and short-term rentals.
That is a truly diversified real estate portfolio to be involved in, and I commend you. It's interesting that you say that it's across geographically. Your portfolio is also spread, and that's one thing that I love about my company, Three Keys, is we do have a geographical spread, which is a unique, like, our investors who invest with us just get a natural diversification with every market, which is really lovely. How did you find your investments? Because a lot of people listening are still figuring this out, and they're trying to figure out, how do I even know where to unearth these amazing opportunities?
So initially, I just Googled. I was looking for investments, and I found some companies that do this. And those turned out to be fairly good sponsors, but by accident. So at that time, I did not really know what I was looking for. I think the best way to find sponsors is to go on social media and just announce yourself as a passive investor. The downside is that you will be bombarded with emails and texts and voice messages. It's kind of like sharks smelling blood, because capital is the big thing in real estate. So as an investor, if you tell people that you're an investor, you will have no difficulty finding opportunities after that.
There is so much truth to that. Yeah. If you just say, oh, I want to be a limited partner, I want to passively invest, everybody is going to be attracted to you. And then at that point, okay, well, let's just say, hey, an amazing conscious investor, they do that. They just hop into one of the different forums. They put that out there. How do you go about vetting the sponsors that you are working with?
Yeah, so I typically look at a few different things. The first one is the track record. So what kind of deals have they done? What kind of returns? What has been their approach? Any problems, capital calls, anything that would kind of raise a red flag? That's one thing I do. The other one is I ask around. So I talk to other passive investors. I'm a member of many passive investor communities, and I ask, have you ever invested with this and that? And then they say, run away screaming. And so then I run away screaming. Or they say, great group, and then I look deeper into it.
Wow. Okay. So that's really interesting. How often have you seen people say, whoa, stay away from that one within the community or just your experience?
Not very often. My experience is that most sponsors are quite ethical and they are doing their best to maximize investor returns. But I've had a few cases where people have told me some horror stories about, for example, companies changing their names so that they can hide the fact that they've gone bankrupt on projects. And obviously, when people do things like that, then I don't want to invest with them.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that things can happen. Wow. So you've been passively investing. How has that benefited you? What are some of the highs and lows of that?
Yeah, so I would say on the low side is definitely the first few months of the pandemic, because I had made investments in these different assets. And initially, it didn't look so great. So there was all this concern. Everybody was saying distributions are canceled for now and negotiating with the bank to keep these assets alive. I had some office buildings. I had some hotels. Those struggled for some time. But overall, it's really been a kind of a life-changing strategy for me. So I think my net worth has grown 3 times as fast as it used to before I started passive investing. Some of it, of course, is just luck with the pandemic. I do believe moving forward, I think real estate investment is going to be a good way to build wealth as long as you have enough time to wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And when you say it's like, wow, this is like absolutely life-changing, obviously it's improved your net worth. What are some other ways that you found that to just be, whoa, this is a big deal?
I think the biggest thing is just that my net worth went from being reasonably good, sort of middle-class net worth, to the point where I don't need to work anymore if I don't want to. So if I wanted to quit today, just go to my dean, which is kind of like a boss in academia, but not really the pretty weak. Anyway, so if I went to them and said like, okay, I don't want to work anymore, I wouldn't have any trouble covering my expenses and saving money and doing whatever I want. So that's a big thing. And I think the other one is just learning how to think about these investments. Because in the stock markets, the funny thing is that people tell us that we should not try to beat the market, right? In these index funds and just settle for the average. Whereas in real estate, that's not at all true because these are private markets. So if you have the networks and the information, you can find really good deals in real estate.
That's so true. And with that, you have actually made that transition that I would say many, but actually there's an interesting influx that happens with passive investors going from, remember, let me back up for anyone who's listening and you're just getting into this, right? In any deal that we have in a big real estate syndication where we're pooling all of our money together, we have our active investors, the people on the general partner who are doing all of the heavy lifting. They're finding the property. They have the relationships with the brokers. They're negotiating. They're signing on the loan. They're putting in risk capital. They're really putting in a whole lot. And then we have the limited partners. And limited partners, while they don't have a voting rights and such, they get all the upside, all the gains. And so by nature of having these active general partners invested in this private purchase, there is so much skin in the game and desire for everything to be successful that everyone wins. So you have been on the limited partner side. But now you're like, wait a second, maybe I want to be involved on the active side. And so tell us a little bit about your transition into the general partnership world.
That was really an accident initially. I did not have any plans to do that, but I had a chance to make a venture capital investment last year. Invested in a company that 3D printed housing. So they built these communities and rent them out. And we'll talk about that, assume, later in this episode. But I made that investment. I met with the CEO and he asked me to consult for the company. And when I started doing that, the light bulb kind of went on that maybe I could do my own deals as well. And I also had this sabbatical coming up. So one of the best parts about being a professor is that every 6 years or so, I get a semester off with full pay. So I don't need to do much, but I get paid. So I use that time to try to build my real estate business. Of course, that turned out to be a lot more complicated than I thought, but I've made some progress and I've got a few deals closed and under contract right now.
That's a lot of progress. That's a whole lot of progress. So congratulations on that. And you're diversified in a lot of different assets, not just apartments, where my company, we focus on apartments. At some point, we'll diversify, but I really love apartments. And so tell us about some of the other assets that you mentioned office space and the hospitality. What are some of the pros and cons of those other asset classes?
So on the office side, I'm not sure if I want to invest in them moving forward because I think it's still very unclear what's going to happen with all this return to office and everything. And I think you really need to have a crystal ball to do well in that asset class. But where I've had some traction is with hospitality. So I have a few short-term rentals, which are nice because they cash flow really well. So that's the big benefit of hospitality is that the cash flow is fantastic. And I've got a few hotels now under contract, the smaller boutique hotels, which I hope have the cash flow of short-term rentals, but a little more scale, because the problem with short-term rentals is that each deal is very small, so you go crazy with these K1s and all of those things when you try to do that.
Yeah, I could only even imagine. Tax-wise, tax benefits, do they shift at all? And when we say short-term rental, again, for anyone that's just coming into this, you're learning and getting your bearings, most of you are thinking of Airbnb, right? Those type of spaces. Those are short-term rentals. People are just going renting a house for a short period of time or tiny home or whatever it is, some type of dwelling. And that's what we're talking about when we say short-term rental or STR. You'll see hear us drop those little acronyms around. So within that, listen to this. These are a professor and a former teacher. We'll just do the little legwork along the way, make this really allow everyone to move on. So tax-wise, do you notice any differences with how being tax advantaged between these different asset classes?
Yeah. First of all, it's quite complicated with hotels and short-term rentals. But generally speaking, they do have some advantages. So one of them is, for example, is that a lot of the investment is things like furniture, so on, which you can depreciate 100% right away because there's a special classification in the tax code for that. The thing, there is a big tax advantage is that you can often use short-term rentals to reduce your active income on the deduction side, even if you are not a full-time real estate, so-called real estate professional. There's all kinds of very specific rules on when and how you can do that. I'm not a tax professional, so don't go and claim those deductions without checking with your CPA and all that. But there's more scope for that because the IRS considers them more like a business rather than a kind of passive rental investment.
That is really fascinating. And I was wondering about that, if it was viewed more as a business first than a passive investment. So that is very, very fascinating. And how about on the office space side? Again, so on the asset classes, I haven't chosen to dive into, but you are. So I'm like, ooh.
So I haven't done a whole lot. My office space experience much more limited, but typically they are treated as rentals because all you are doing is you're giving the space to somebody else who is then running the business.
Okay. That's kind of what I would suspect. So, and if you're listening and you're wondering, how is this going to affect my taxes? Or how can I leverage any of these resources for my taxes? Then make sure you reach out to Mode Wealth and they'll be in the show notes. Make sure you reach out to them and they can help you create an actual tax strategy that will support you because they focus on real estate and can definitely help you leverage everything. At least that's what they've done for my family and I love it. So I want to go into 3D printing. It's absolutely fascinating. And I love that you've used your background and you're going into a different asset class on the active side. And 3D printing is super cool. Go ahead and take us down the rabbit hole. And again, if you're listening, you can go over to the YouTube channel. This should be housed within the Conscious Investor where you can actually see different pictures and such.
So 3D printing solves a few key problems in construction. So the first one is time. So once you've done the site work and you've got everything set up, you can 3D print the house in a week. Bring this big tent to the site, you bring this huge printer to the site, and then you print. And the structure of the house comes up. It is almost magical. Very few people believe it the first time I say it, but it is possible and that has already been done. There are 3D printed houses in Austin, there's 3D printed houses in Virginia. They are really a thing now. So that's one thing. The second thing is the cost. So 3D printing is cheaper than traditional stick built by quite a wide margin. Depends exactly on what you are printing, where you are, and so on. But we are talking about savings, 20, 30, 40% cost savings from 3D printing. And the reason, again, is that you come to the site, you 3D print in a week, two or three people on the site, instead of having this huge crew going in for months and months. And finally, it is also environmentally quite friendly because you reduce the greenhouse gas emissions from all this back and forth, moving the crews, moving the materials and everything. And these houses can be very durable. So, for example, the company I work with, Family Communities, gives 50-year warranties on their homes. Typical home builders give 10 years.
That's absolutely impressive. Okay, I have to ask an honest question. I don't mean to put you in the hot seat, but I actually have a quarry that is just, it's actually in my neighborhood. You might not remember. Conscious Investors, you remember. I live in middle of nowhere on the Canadian border in North Idaho. And so anyhow, I mean, there's a quarry and we've been doing a lot of road construction. And so I've been thinking a lot about the environment and with California passing legislation that gasoline powered vehicles are now going to be banned after 2035. It just makes me like more aware. I'm like, okay, you start to look at all of our resources and looking at this quarry getting bigger and bigger and bigger. What is your perspective when you think of the 3D printing requiring? Does it require? I don't want to make an assumption on my part. What does it require and what would the environmental impact be?
So the materials are not that different. So of course, 3D printing is concrete. So if you compare building a concrete home, 3D printed or traditional, it's the same thing. We have lower process emissions because everything can be done kind of in one go. And for example, for the first family communities in Houston, everything is local. Every material is within 1 hour's driving distance from the site. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's very difficult to do with traditional construction. Of course, there are even more sustainable materials. So producing concrete, cement, all that is environmentally intensive. It takes materials. That's not something we are addressing. And there's other ways to build sustainable wood. There's all kinds of solutions. But we do significantly better than traditional construction when it comes to cement and concrete. And I think the jury is still out how that would compare to, let's say, a wooden house.
Yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting. And so if somebody was interested, how could they be involved in the 3D printing space? what would their relationship be with you and the company, and maybe bringing that to development project they might be interested in doing or something along those lines?
Yeah, so there's a few different ways to partner with family communities. One of them is if you happen to have land in a great location and you're looking to do something with it, we can help you with that. Certainly landowners out there, especially if you have the infrastructure ready, please get in touch. That's one. The second one, of course, is also joining as an equity partner. Now, I can't go out here and sort of advertise specific projects or anything. That's not how this works, but you can always connect with the company and see what kind of opportunities are available in general. And then just finally, of course, we are always looking for people who have new ideas for what to do with this technology. Is it affordable housing? What are some ways that we can use this technology to have the biggest impact?
I love it. So there's some practical ways that you can participate with this, the 3D printing space. Going back to this for clarity for the listeners, let's just talk a moment about the infrastructure within the 3D printed homes. We've got plumbing, we've got electricity, we've got water, right? Like, how are those addressed? Are they in the walls? Are they, how do we get our utilities in?
Yeah, so those obviously need to be done after the 3D printing itself. And the process there is fairly traditional. You install these things. The way the 3D printing works is that it is designed to make that as easy as possible. Because when we are layering the concrete and the cement, we can do it in a way that just makes it very easy and efficient to install the utilities. So we can even save some time with that stage of construction, even though it's not actually done with 3D printing.
Awesome. And then do we just go in and put sheetrock over the walls to cover pipes on the inside or?
Pretty much. So you would do the finishes just like you would do with any other home. Of course, the 3D printed kind of walls and everything, they look a bit different from what you would get with other technologies. But I think that difference is kind of shrinking. People are getting pretty creative with ways to do the finishes. And as a result, in the end, you might not notice that you're living in a 3D printed home these days.
It kind of reminds me, and these are some of the more primitive versions, I'm sure, of 3D printing and everything, but it almost reminds me of homes way back when, log cabin style homes where you had the logs. And where I live, people actually still have log cabin homes and they even build them intentionally. And like, oh, some of the bulges on the initial prototypes. I don't know, is it still like that?
So if you look at some of the older 3D printed homes, you can clearly see that these are not your regular homes, right? They have these sort of very rough exteriors and they don't have any sharp edges at all, but that's less and less true. And I think today, if you look at these 3D printed homes, they just look like very modern and high quality housing. So that's pretty exciting because it takes that unusual aspect out of it. Very few people want to buy their primary house and kind of gamble, buy something crazy, right? They want something that works and looks normal.
Yes, that makes so much sense. I love it. Johannes, this has been fascinating and informative. I'm just grateful for your willingness to always contribute back to the community. Best place, well, one, is there anything that we left out that you're like, oh no, I really want to touch on this?
I think we covered most of the things here. The one thing I will say is that I think real estate in the next 10 years is going to be really interesting because it is a kind of a legacy industry that doesn't see a whole lot of innovation. Mostly we do things about the same way we've done for 100 years, but I don't think that's necessarily true in the next 10 years. So 3D printing is just one example. There's many other technologies that are changing our industry. And so we might see some really big changes in the next 10 years, and that creates a lot of opportunities for investors and for operators as well.
That is a fascinating perspective. And I agree. I have some friends that are, it seems that there is a lot of ingenuity from 3D printing to panel buildings to there's just a lot of people looking for solutions. And what an exciting time for us professionals, especially with the background that you have and everything. It's just very exciting. What is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
I would say the best way to do that is on LinkedIn. You can find me there. I'm the only person in the world with my name, so you can easily find me. Send me a message, send me a connection request. I'd be more than happy to talk about all of this stuff, whether it's 3D printing or hospitality investing or just passive investing in general.
I love it. And we will have the link to his profile in the show notes to make it really super easy for you. And you want to make sure that you do go and connect. Johannes has very interesting content over on LinkedIn. And if you've been listening for more than two episodes, you know LinkedIn is my favorite social media platform. It's such an uplifting space with a lot of innovators and people thinking outside the box and also looking at what's the current events in a different, more professional lens. So you might find it very refreshing compared to other platforms out there. Very meaningful connections. Johannes, thank you so much once again for your time and joining us on The Conscious Investor.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
And to you, amazing conscious investors, until next time, live big, love bigger. What's the big deal about investing in apartments? Why is it better than investing in a slew of single family homes? I've compiled a lot of information on why investing in a multifamily, also known as apartments, will help you reach your investment goals. Head over to 3keysinvestments.com and download the Why Invest in Multifamily guide today.